This is the Watford Gap. The Watford Gap. Adam Leventhal.
It's episode 4 of the Watford Gap, the first of 2014. A very warm welcome. This is Adam Leventhal, ready to simulate headlong into this week's show.
Coming up,
Radio 1's Chris Stark on his footballing love.
They're like a girlfriend in the sense that I love them to bits, but they also annoy the hell out of me. And there's sometimes I just want to run away.
Find out who England Rugby Union international Lee Dixon is talking about.
He is the nicest bloke you'll ever meet. He will do anything for anybody.
We discuss life after a whitewash in Australia with Paul Nixon, who's been through it with England.
Every newspaper, the turn of page, it's going to be how negative England are, how weak they are, how poor they are. It's thrown in their faces everywhere they go.
In the sports pages, Patrick Barkley explains why Herbert Chapman is top of the lot.
In order, Herbert Chapman, Jose Mourinho, Sir Alex Ferguson.
And there's music from Young Rebel Set, but thankfully, no Middlesbrough rhyming.
We haven't had any reason to rhyme Karanka yet, because he's doing really well.
The Watford Gap.
Right, I'm looking forward to this, because it is time now to speak to Mr. Chris Stark. For people who don't know who he is, he's the man that stands shoulder to shoulder with Scott Mills on Radio 1. He's often covered in water, covered in spittle, doing innuendo bingo. He's a radio presenter. He is soon to be a TV presenter. He is also a Watford fan, which means he is one of my brethren. It is great to speak to you, Chris. How are you?
Hello, Adam. You all right?
Yeah, I'm very, very well. Very, very well indeed.
I'm now, so glad this has finally happened.
Yes, I know. I know.
Because I really want, like, when you first said about the idea of doing this,
yeah,
I was like all up for it. But then I thought I was never going to get an invite from you, but it seems to have finally happened.
Well, I think also for you know, the court that will be deciding who's right and who's wrong in this little debate, you need to also realise, jury, that Chris is a very, very difficult man to pin down at the moment, because he's a very, very busy, busy man, aren't you?
Well, no, it's been a bit busier lately, but nothing too major.
Right, let's talk about the radio side of things, because a lot of people that are Watford fans will have become very, very au fait with what you do because of some of the interviews that you've done,
yeah,
especially with, you know, the likes of Jennifer Aniston and giving her a Watford shirt. Just tell us, how did that all come about, the fact that you were able to sort of commandeer your own style of interviews? I mean, were you sort of just shoved in there, or how did it work?
The thing is, but you're a professional at this, right? So what I must point out here is there's no, like, I didn't go in with any big plan or any kind of idea of a style or anything like that.
Okay.
I think it was just like any person who'd be given the opportunity to be in front of Mila Kunis or Jennifer Aniston, Robert Downey Jr. or these great names. I think it was an idea that came from our show. You know, Scott Mills thought it'd be funny to send me out to go do these interviews, because, you know, it would be like a sort of normal bloke going and interviewing them, rather than the same old, you know, there's a big routine with these kind of interviews. They're called junket interviews, and you know, journalists do this every day with these celebs. You know these journalists go to a hotel, they meet these people, it's part of their routine. This was the first time I'd ever done it. And I did kind of see it as a big opportunity. You know, if you're in front of Jennifer Aniston, and being a massive Watford fan that I am, it made sense that I would want Jennifer Aniston in a Watford shirt.
Mm.
You know, there's no big style to it particularly. It's the only thing I'd say is you get one opportunity with these people, and what do you want to do in that one opportunity? And it might not be the most polished of things, but it's kind of like I came away from the Mila Kunis one, stuff like that, kind of afraid for my job, but equally kind of happy, because I got to talk to her about my mates and Watford and stuff like that, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it comes across very, very well. I do suggest that anyone who hasn't seen any of those interviews that have been mentioned there, go on YouTube and have a look, because they are very entertaining. Let's quickly talk about Watford. It's always been Watford for you. I mean, when did you start going? When did you sort of start realising that you were a Watford fan?
You make it sound like coming out. Like, what did you realise?
Yeah.
Well, I I think, like, a lot of people growing up, my parents weren't really into football, actually. And so probably when I was really young, I'd say I was a Man U fan up to about the age of 10 or something. And then a family friend took me to a Watford game. And I remember it was Watford-Sunderland. And I've still got the programme from it. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And then I never got to see football live because, you know, my parents didn't go. And anyway, I went to this first game. And then a couple of years later, I started, because I went to a school just down the road from Vicarage Road. I went to Watford Grammar.
Oh, perfect. That's where my mum went.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, not cool.
Obviously, they were split into boys and girls, weren't they?
Yeah,
yeah.
So I went to that school, and then obviously I was down the road from the ground. So I started going to more and more games, and my best mate was a big Watford fan, and it just became our routine. So, you know, I lived in Pinner, so what we would do is there used to be a McDonald's there. So we go to McDonald's there and then go off to, well, generally what we do is go, there's a war memorial in Pinner on the top of the high street. We sort of chill around there and then head off to Watford to go watch the game. And it was just a really good routine. And then, it, you know, that made it a big part of my life. I used to spend all my money kind of saving up for the ticket each week. And I loved it. And, you know, as I said, it was just a routine. I suppose I knew I was a proper Watford fan when, you know, that routine kind of became my life, and it was the thing I looked forward to every week. And they're like a girlfriend in the sense that I love them to bits, but they also annoy the hell out of me. And there's sometimes I just want to run away. I'm not going to lie. I look at Man United every now and then, or Man City every now and then, think they look quite sexy, but it's always Watford that I come home to.
Nice. Right. Let's talk about your new show. Forthcoming on Channel 4, I suppose, is it a sort of an expansion of what you've been able to do with these TV interviews for Radio 1, just having your own show and you're the main man?
Yeah, kind of. I think it's I liked it because it just seemed like a bit of a laugh, to be honest, Adam. You'll soon learn there's not much sort of professionalism about how I go about things. It's it came from the Mila Kunis interview that I did, and the idea that you can talk to celebs maybe in a way which makes them say something different. Maybe they feel a bit more comfortable. Take them out of their environment and put them in your environment, and what will happen when that, you know, if you can make that happen. And so we did that. Like, I drew up a list of legends, as we call it, and then it was my journey going around meeting them. I mean, the basic premise of it is every talk show, every chat show is basically the same. It's in a studio. You know, there's a presenter and there's a sofa. And I think what we wanted to maybe do is go and make our own chat show, but do it differently. So we go out and find the celebrities. We go out and find these famous people. And they're all people that, for one reason or another, I want to meet. Not because of fame or anything like that, but mainly because me and my mates were in a pub and we had an opportunity to draw a list. And we drew that list of people.
Who's on the list?
Well, I don't want to say everyone, but there was a lot of people that we wanted to meet and do want to meet, but we filmed one of the episodes already. And I think the idea is if people like this episode, then we'll go and film some more.
Okay.
But it varied. I mean, for example, one of the people was Rachel Stevens, just because she was the first FHM cover I ever bought. And I remember me and my mates queuing at a newsagent's by Watford Station, having to, like, when this S Club edition was coming out, because they covered up the cover and everyone wanted Rachel Stevens. I remember it so much. And I got Tina. I remember being gutted. So it was like we wanted to go meet Rachel Stevens, and we wanted to ideally do that and bring her out to maybe like a pub or, you know, a Pizza Hut buffet, or go to a driving range. And that's the idea, is we try and bring these people out of their normal environment. So like Rachel Stevens was on the list. I mean, equally, Johnny Knoxville was on the list. I mean, it is quite sort of broad. And it's whether, you know, someone a bit normal like me can go and make a talk show, you know, can go and make a chat show, even if it is a bit of a different format to what you're used to.
Yeah, nice one. Well, people need to look out for that. That's forthcoming on Channel 4. And final question, just going back, I know you mentioned about the fact that it's taken a bit of time to get this interview sorted. I think when we were originally talking about it, you were doing a deadline day, weren't you, on Radio 1. And it was almost like what we do on Sky Sports News.
Yeah.
But for basically getting rid of your girlfriend or boyfriend before Christmas, is that right?
Yeah. So we often talk about this and say it's a bit cruel to bumped over Christmas. So what we do is we make a deadline day, and this year we really went to town. So we basically used you as inspiration, you and your colleagues as inspiration, and made a proper deadline day. So the idea was you had until a certain time, which is 3 o'clock on the day we chose, to decide whether you want to dump your boyfriend or girlfriend, and if not, you had to stick with them all throughout the Christmas period until like the 6th of January. The idea being it's very cruel to dump over Christmas. and then we made it into a proper transfer. It was such a fun show, but stressful, man. I don't know how you do that job.
Yeah, it's a big day though, isn't it? It's a lot of fun, and it seems to have got a lot of people talking. I mean, you're one and our one as well.
But I love how it escalates. Like, I love how transfer deadline day, you know, the way the Sky Sports do it and the way the BBC do it. I think it's great because I love that it becomes a proper event.
I really appreciate your time. Good luck with all your new projects, and I'm sure we'll hook up again once again on the Watford Gap.
Yeah, look, get me on more. I'd love to.
Fine, deal.
Cool. All right then, Adam.
The Watford Gap. Adam Leventhal.
Time to talk rugby union now, and Lee Dixon, the scrum half for Northampton Saints and England, joins us. Are you well, Lee?
Really well. Loving life at the moment, so everything's on the up, which is good.
Now, I just wanted to start by talking right from the beginning, being born in Germany, why was that?
My dad was in the army. He's now no longer in the army, but he was for many years, and he was based over there, so I was born in Germany, lived there for about 7 years on and off, because through the army you move around every 2 years, so born there and then came back over to England. So
is any of the, were you speaking German then, or because you were you were surrounded by Brits, I guess?
Yeah, they have, obviously the army barracks all have English schools on the barracks and stuff, so I was born over there, came back over, then I moved back over for a good 5 year stint, and I was at primary school over there, but it was English speaking primary school full of army kids rather than in a German speaking school.
Okay, fair enough. I only ask because I'm returning to my only language of note at GCSE level. I'm actually trying to relearn German at the moment. So when I saw that, I just thought, oh, I wonder if Lee might be able to help me out, but clearly you can't.
I can say one or two words, and that's probably about it. I can't even probably say that anymore.
Excellent. Right, let's talk about the main stuff, which is coming up. Obviously, the Six Nations. I suppose now your first choice, your top dog.
You can put it like that. Hopefully, in the autumn international started all three. We're coming off the back of a good start to the season with the Saints. Was lucky enough to get all three starts in the autumn, and I think after that I've improved while playing for Saints, and hopefully I'm going into the Six Nations as number one. But there is stiff competition with the likes of Danny and Ben as well, so you can never take it for granted. So each game I play, I need to make sure I play at 100%, and hopefully I can have that shirt again come the France week.
If you had to sort of sum up what a scrum half traditionally is like, in football, they always say a goalkeepers are completely crackers, and they're completely different to the rest of the side. Is there any sort of traits that scrum halves have?
I'd say we are mouthy. We quite a lot get called like little terriers.
Yeah.
Just always yapping at you. Well, that's what I get called quite a lot. I think little terrier always in people's faces. I think you're a bit of a wind-up merchant. You like, because we're around all the big lads, so it's the sort of thing is you wind them up and then you take a backward step if anything actually happens.
I mean, you mentioned obviously you're fighting for the place with Danny Kerr, Ben Youngs as well. Do you all get along, and or is there that real competitive rivalry that you'll sort of think, all right, well, I'm not sharing a room with him, or I'm not going to sit with him at breakfast?
No, not at all. That's the beauty of the England squad at the moment. I think there is competition for places all over the park, and it is a squad thing, and we are building to the World Cup, and that's been made clear on the amount of people in the squad and the competition for the places. I think we all get on well, and there's always going to be one person that's going to be disappointed, and I think last year it was me. I was going home on a Tuesday in the autumn. It was Danny. We all shake each other's hands. Well done. Really sorry to see you go. And you know, it is all very good, but then when it comes to it, you want to be starting. So there's that edge in training, that edge, you know, that you want to be the starting nine, and I want to be starting number nine, and I have that edge in training and off the pitch. But at the end of the day, we are all friends, and you know, we do have go for coffees and stuff together as a squad and things. So, you know, it's the right time, the right place. But at the end of the day, it is rugby, and you want to be the starting number nine, and that's what I want to be.
I was looking down the age of the squad as well, and I mean, I'm not an expert on the ages of every squad that there has been in the Six Nations over years and years and years, but to see only two players in their 30s and only just, it surprised me how fresh this squad is.
Yeah, definitely. I think from day one, Stuart's wanted to, you know, he's wanted to build for the World Cup, so he's wanted to get young players in to build up, you know, them having experience at that level. And you know, I think it has worked, and I think I'm one of the old ones these days. I don't act it and feel it, but you know, the amount of youth coming through, the likes of Marcus Watson and Anthony Watson, Anthony, isn't it, not Marcus?
Yeah,
his brother's Marcus. He plays sevens for England, and Jack Knowles, people like that. You know, it's phenomenal to see them breaking in for their clubs and then taking it onto the international stage now. And you know, Stuart's got massive faith in young players, and he, you know, he will throw them out there against in the Six Nations, and I'm sure they'll do an amazing job because they've shown in the Premiership, they've been lighting the Premiership up, which is brilliant for them and brilliant for the country as well.
Just looking at the makeup of the squad as well, obviously the Saints are very, very well represented, and Luther Burrell is now in the squad. Just give us your little scouting brief on him as he starts his England career.
Oh, he's been one of our standout players this season, Luther. He's still quite young. Last year he was probably finding his feet, you know, a new club, and then this year, you know, start of this season, he's just been absolutely phenomenal. He's unlucky, you know, in the autumn, but you know, you've got people like Billy Twelvetrees who've been playing very well as well. So, you know, for him, you know, he is probably the informed centre at the moment. I imagine, you know, going into this camp, he'll be hopefully going to get that 12 or 13 shirt. And you know, he is a good player, and if he does exactly what he does for Saints as he does for England, you know, he'll be there for many years.
And Dylan Hartley, just tell me about him, because he just intrigues me. I'm not sure, I can't seem to pick him. He seems as if he's got a quite a solemn sort of face at times. Obviously he can lose it at times as well. What is he like?
He is the nicest bloke you'll ever meet.
Is he?
Yeah. He will do anything for anybody. He'll drop what he's doing to help other people out, but he is an absolute massive competitor.
Yeah.
He would do anything for this club, and when he plays for his country, he'd do anything for that as well. He literally leads from the front at the club and leads from the front of the country, and you know, you don't want to be, when you take the field with someone like that and you see him at the front leading us out, you always feel that, you know he's there and you want to follow him. And then off the pitch, he's such a nice guy, and he's quite a relaxed guy. So some people get the wrong of him.
And just final question, another stupid question for me. How many times and how often are you confused with Lee Dixon, the footballer?
I think more on Twitter than anything else. I get annoyed when people spell it my name wrong.
Yes.
So when people put D-I-X, I ought to go out of my way to correct them.
So you're happier being a dick rather than a dicks.
Yeah. Yeah.
for want of a better phrase.
Yes. My nickname is Dicko, so you can't have a D-I-X-O, because it wouldn't work.
You'd be Dixo.
Yeah, so it's a Dicko I am.
Perfect.
And that's, I have to make sure every time someone spells it wrong, I get quite annoyed, and I'll make sure that they put it D-I-C-K-S-O in.
Have you met Lee Dixon, the other Lee Dixon?
No. Yeah. I haven't met him.
I think there's a TV show in that, you know.
Maybe.
Dixon. Yeah.
I'm up to speed on football, so if they ever want me on Match of the Day, I'm happy to go on with them.
Job done. Sounds good. Nice one. Well, Lee, it's been a pleasure talking to you.
Thank you very much, Adam.
I wish you all the best for this year.
Yeah, thank you, and hopefully we'll see you soon.
The Sports Pages.
Okay, let's talk to the journalist and author Patrick Barkley, whose new book is The Life and Times of Herbert Chapman, the story of one of football's most influential figures. For people who don't know, perhaps, about Herbert Chapman, he won 4 league titles as a manager, 2 with Huddersfield, 2 with Arsenal. He died tragically early at the age of 55. He also won two FA Cups, both with Huddersfield and Arsenal. I suppose, Paddy, that's the show us your medals bit, but as it says in the title of the book, on the front cover, his legacy is far more wide-ranging than that, isn't it? He was a pioneer.
Yes, as you say, he was much more than just a manager with lots of medals. To his credit, he was a showman, an impresario who helped to build or to provide the money and the impetus for the rebuilding of Highbury into probably the most we would say iconic now, but probably the most recognisable and prestigious football stadium, club stadium in the world. He did lots of things. He forecast and fought for so many things that we now consider normal and exciting parts of football. Floodlights, for example, European football, all the things we look forward to in football. He called for, and he put numbers on shirts along with his friend David Calderhead, the Chelsea manager. They numbered the players 1 to 22, 1 to 11. I think Arsenal were 1 to 11 and Chelsea were 12 to 22 on the opening day of the 1928-9 season. I'll talk to you about tactics, if you like, and as a sort of second-rate Jonathan Wilson, and talk about how he tactically influenced the game. I mean, everything, absolutely everything.
I mean, you talk about that sort of civilised element of football in those days, and when you see some of the ways now that footballers behave, that managers behave, the things that are said, the behaviour and the almost, I don't know, not the hatred of football agents, but the power that they have now. When you look back at those times, does it make you all warm and fuzzy?
Yeah, it does. It makes me wish, makes me nostalgic for an era that I'm not that old, Adam.
I know.
But I mean, no, it does make me nostalgic. I wish we could have the values of that time back, the modesty, the concentration really on the game, pure and simple.
When you talk about, the tactical side of things, it strikes me, and I know you've spoken about that, the harsher nature where he had to do tough things at tough times. It seems as if overall he was quite a humble guy that was very, very well thought of, intensely sort of thoughtful, and not necessarily by doing good deeds, but almost as if his mind was just whirring all the time about new things that he could do. He was way before his time, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was, Tom Whittaker, his assistant at Arsenal, talked about his endless, restless mind, that endlessly questioning mind. And he was definitely that way. He was a very fertile sort of man. But, what you said before about his modesty, that that partly came through religion. He was taught religion by his parents, who were illiterate, obviously very good parents, up in a Yorkshire, Yorkshire mining village. And he became he was a Methodist. That was a Methodist community, and he got Methodism from them. But he later became sort of Church of England, and at his funeral, which obviously the church was packed and with visitors from all over the world, or wreaths from all over the world, and football people, but there were also some places reserved for the local parishioners. And the vicar said at the address, he said, many of you will have heard of the famous football manager Herbert Chapman, most famous football manager in the world, but a lot of you are probably unaware that it's the same fella who walked around with a collection plate during services every Sunday morning. He was, can you imagine, Arsene Wenger or Jose Mourinho being able just quietly to blend in with the congregation every Sunday morning. It's just amazing.
I mean, talking about his death, the one thing that I, not that I have a pet hate of, but it's something that almost irritates me in a way that now when anyone is being commemorated or tributes are being made at football grounds, there's an insistence on having a minute's applause, which at times I think is great because you're celebrating a life. But I yes. think looking back and reading about when he had died, just 55, and on the day of the game at Highbury, yes. there was yes. a very solemn atmosphere. Everyone yes. took their hats off. And I know it was a different time, but then they played the last post. And that just yeah. that gave me goosebumps just trying to imagine what it must have been like then. And I it almost made me, I mean, it's a weird yearning, but that having a minute's silence is a very, very poignant thing, which we don't seem to have anymore.
Yes, Adam, I agree with you. I suppose it's gone out of fashion, partly because of, you know, Europeanization. In Italy, that's always been the case, the minutes of applause. And I suppose also because, excuse me, of the danger of some idiot coming in yeah. to the back of the stand from the pub and yelling and spoiling it for everybody. But yes, I agree with you. I would have loved to have been there on that day in January the 6th, 1934, Adam. I completely understand what you mean there. Also, there's another point about that. He died at about 3 in the morning, I think, on that same morning of pneumonia. And in fact, some of the players learned of his death only through seeing newspaper billboards as they went to board the tube to get to Highbury. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And they now, of course, the match would be postponed. But of course, there was absolutely no thought of that at that time. They just, Arsenal quickly set about just doing it right, and the crowd responded. They were silent. There appears to have been hardly even a cheer when the goals were scored. There was 1-1 against Sheffield United. Mm. And I went to the to get a copy of the local paper on the Monday. I think it would have been the Islington Gazette, and I'll never forget reading the report. The chap said, I gather it was quite a good match on Saturday, surprisingly in the circumstances, but must confess that I was unable to concentrate on it. I can tell you that, you know, so-and-so scored for Arsenal and so-and-so for Sheffield United. And then he went on to describe the scenes, but he said, really, I haven't much stomach for... anything else about the game, and nor had the crowd.
Yeah, no, I read that bit, and it just seemed as if it just really sort of jolted everyone within football, and obviously yeah. everyone that he knew at the time.
And the team, because I mean, they were an all-conquering side at their peak, and yet I think of the next few games, I mean, they lost a derby to Spurs, which was a surprise.
Yeah.
The home derby to Spurs shortly afterwards, and their form just went skew whiff. But they did recover in time to win the title. But I mean, the players obviously had a real kick, and they were completely stunned by the loss of the boss.
The last question before we do the competition: obviously, you've done biographies of Herbert Chapman, but also Sir Alex Ferguson and Jose Mourinho.
That's
right. In studying all of those people,
yeah.
who do you hold in the highest regard? Or I mean, is it automatically Herbert Chapman because that's your most recent work, or is that not the case?
Yes. I'd give them in order: Herbert Chapman, Jose Mourinho, Sir Alex Ferguson. In terms of how I warm to them and like them.
It is competition time, and we have 5 copies of this wonderful book, The Life and Times of Herbert Chapman, to give away. And you have a question for us just to test out the Watford Gap listeners.
Yep, right. Now, the 1930 FA Cup final, the famous one, where, you know, both teams had a Chapman connection. The game ended Arsenal 2, Huddersfield Town 0. But who were the scorers?
Okay, so who were the scorers? 1930 FA Cup final, Arsenal won 2-0. You just need to name those two Arsenal scorers. And to enter the competition, all you need to do is go on Twitter, at the Watford Gap is our address, and then send those two names to us, and the competition will remain open for a week, and then we will let everyone know who has won those 5 copies. Paddy, I really, really appreciate your time. It's been great to talk about Herbert Chapman, and thanks very much for coming on.
I've enjoyed it, Adam. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
the Watford Gap.
Okay, it's time to talk cricket now, and we've been joined by Paul Nixon, the former Leicestershire, former England wicket keeper, man who went on until he was, 75 playing cricket, I think it was, in the end. Paul, great to have you with us. How are you? I'm only joking.
Oh, very well. Do you know what, Adam? My knees feel like the 75, so I know exactly where you're coming from.
Let's just talk about something that just dropped into my mind when England had lost the Ashes 5-0 once again this time around. It made me think about the last time that it happened and the one-day series which followed, which was when you came into the side full of beans, full of enthusiasm, full of positive thoughts. And although it didn't go well to start off with, it ended on a high and England actually won that one-day series. And I was just wondering, what were your memories of having to go into a dressing room which was on their knees and having to try and lift them up at that time?
Yeah, it was an interesting one. Duncan Fletcher and Michael Vaughan were very honest and open with me at the start and said, Nico, you know, what do you feel your role is in this side? You know, what are you going to add to this team? And I was, you know, they were wanting me to make sure that I was myself and not, you know, artificial in that environment. And that really helped me, just being my honest, natural self, open self. And, you know, one of the things that I like to bring to a dressing room is honesty. And I think that a team has to go forward and be honest. And for me, it was a great joy. I waited a long time for it. I had no demons in my mind. I was in a good place. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, in effect, I spread the belief that other people can do it. And I just felt that England team had lost that belief. And the senior management team wanted strong characters to help spread that belief back.
Do you see similarities now that you just look at, not picking him out because he's the captain, but when you talk about belief and something lacking, do you look at Alistair Cook now and think nothing's going for him, is it?
Yeah, it's tough. We've all been there. You know, I've been there as a captain with Leicestershire with a very young side. It's very tough. But, you know, what Alistair's got to do, there's a lot of good people out there and a lot of people, and it's not a weakness to go and help and to go and ask for help and to go and chat to other people. You know, it's crucial that he wants to learn and grow, and that's, you know, we don't know all the answers. Everybody doesn't know all the answers, and you need a wind in your sails every so often to help you fly.
Just tell us about what it's like, and for people to try and imagine what it is like now for those England players after you've lost 5-0.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough for the England lads wherever they go. Every newspaper they turn, to turn a page, it's going to be how negative England are, how weak they are, how poor they are. It's thrown in their faces everywhere they go, from billboards to news, TV channels, everything, everywhere they listen to, it's a negative vibe. And that's where they have to be resilient, they've got to be strong. And it can be a tough place to be, but it's about you and your group and what you can control. And that's what the England management will be working on now. And it's trying to get, there will be guys who are a little bit down. You'll see them won't be as chirpy. They'll be a bit quieter, a bit more reserved. Their sense of humour might be a bit more negative. And it's trying to turn that around one step at a time to get the whole wheel turning and everybody right and everybody up for it and everybody in a good place and practice to be out there to go and express themselves out in the middle again.
Let's just talk about something that might, if they had the opportunity to do it, might actually help them. And it's something that you're involved with, and it's called Zing Performance. Just tell us about that and perhaps how it could help an England dressing room that is very, very low on confidence and doesn't seem to be in a particularly good place at this moment in time. What is Zing Performance?
Yeah, Zing Performance is basically a tool for your brain to hold and process information. It's a daily exercise program that it stimulates your cerebellum in the back of your brain. And I was quite a slow learner as a boy. I'm a bit dyslexic, so I was quite a slow learner. And coaches used to tell me things, it went straight in and straight out, and it didn't hold that information. And by doing the Zing online assessment and working that, and basically every day just doing a few little brain training exercises, the difference it made to my life and career was astronomical, and it has done for many other sportsmen as well. And it's now, originally it was you had to go into Kenilworth just outside Birmingham and to their place and do the process there, but now it's all online, so anybody can do it. And basically what that does, it's almost like your mobile phone. It's giving you a new mobile phone that has got so much more storage and memory in it. It's almost like when you're riding a bike for the first time, there's too much going on and your brain can't handle it and it hasn't got storage to cope with the mechanisms that are going on. But the cerebellum down the line makes you become instinctive. Your cerebellum remembers what it's doing, the little walnut in the back of your head, which is like a little brain within a brain. And that makes it instinctive down the line. But it's a bit like a car battery. If it's coughing and spluttering and doesn't get going, it just coughs and splutters again. But if it can get going with the right stimulation through the right exercises at the right time, then you can almost, you literally do grow new pathways in your brain, and that can create that. So, you know, seeing somebody like Finn, who's in overload at the moment, his working memory in his brain is overloaded with information and he can't take that information in, and he now needs a break to go and relax that. We're saying that with Zing Performance, you're going to have more storage, you're not going to have an overload, and you're going to process that information.
It's very, very interesting. I think I'm going to give it a go myself. We have a competition which I would like you to help me with, and basically we're giving away a Leicester City shirt, and I thought it would be great for someone who played for Leicestershire, who knows the place so well, and the fact that the football team are going very, very well in the Championship makes it great that you can do this draw for me. Basically, everyone has entered on Twitter by sending the Watford Gap the hashtag #WinShirt. And what I need you to do is, I will tell you when I've started scrolling through the people that have sent in the right hashtag. And if you can just tell me to stop at a random point, then that would be much appreciated. And then we can pick out the winner and we can send off that shirt to them. I've started scrolling. You can just tell me to stop at any point.
Okay, stop.
Okay, the winner is Matt Burton. So Matt Burton, many congratulations. You have won a signed Leicester City shirt. Paul, I really appreciate your time. It's been great to have you on the show, and I'm sure we'll get you back on soon as well to talk about your book, because I'd like to just go a little bit more in depth into your life. That would be great. Thanks a lot for coming on.
Pleasure.
The Watford Gap. Adam Leventhal.
Okay, it's time for our musical guest for this latest episode of The Watford Gap. And we're profiling the band, which is called Young Rebel Set. And we're joined by the drummer from said band, Luke Evans. How are you, Luke? It's good to have you on.
I'm very well, Adam. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good indeed. A lot of people I would have thought would be familiar with the track that we can play in a moment, The Lash of the Whip, because it seems to be popping up all over the shop at the moment.
Yeah, that was our last single, Lash of the Whip. It's been everywhere. It's like, especially in the football industry, it's been Soccer AM, and like, it's been on Final Score and Soccer Saturday and stuff like that. So it's good to hear it in like the stadiums, and like, it's good to see it being played everywhere. It's quite an upbeat song as well, so I can see why like the football fans are getting into it as well. So that's good.
Right, let's just hear a little bit of it now. If I should fall down, you'll be there when and wherever I hit the ground. If I should fall down, you'll be there making sure that I don't make a sound. So that's The Lash of the Whip. I mean, you say about it popping up in football stadiums, you see it on the TV. What is that like? Because it must be weird having your two sort of loves combined, I suppose.
Yeah, it's really good, because it's good because obviously I've got a lot of friends who are into football but not into music, who sort of like don't really follow the band. So when it coincides with the football, like, all your mates start like really like start getting it in the band, because like, I think you're cool if it's getting played in the stadiums and stuff. So yeah, it's good how like the two things go together.
What's the plan at the moment? Because obviously the new album is Crocodile. You had some tour dates towards the end of last year, but you're out on tour again next month in February.
Yep, back end of February, we're going to go back to the UK and do some shows. We haven't been touring the UK much as of late, because last year we did the second album, recorded it, then did like concentrated on like Germany and Europe, did a couple of UK shows, but now we're going to go back, going to do a couple of small UK shows, like we're going to all like the major cities, London, Leeds, Edinburgh, Glasgow, Preston. I don't know if Preston's a major city, but it's a good place to go. Yeah, we're going all over, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Now, when I was looking into the band before we did this interview, I was looking on Wikipedia, and your Wikipedia page is in German. Now,
yeah, no,
what's that all about? You're big in Germany. Are you sort of bigger than Hasselhoff over there?
I don't think we're quite as big as Hasselhoff. I mean, he has, like, he's critically acclaimed, isn't he, with such singles as Get In My Car or whatever it was.
Yeah, exactly.
But, we got, like, a deal over there. There was quite a famous man in Germany who enjoyed our stuff, and he came to meet us at a show in Newcastle. And he was like, oh, I can make you famous in Germany.
Ah.
We were like, well, just make us some money. We're not bothered being famous. We'll do anything. So, yeah, he got us some shows out there, and people just like really took to us. I think they liked the English people, and they liked what we were doing. So we've been going over there for the last couple of years, and all the shows sell out, and it's just amazing to go over there. And that's what we're trying to do in the UK, just build it up, and like just because we do really well in the northeast of England, like with our fans and stuff. But we're going back on tour now to like start building it up again, because we love the UK as well, so it'd be good to have it everywhere.
It was interesting reading about you when you were making the latest album. I think it was about the latest album that you'd sort of come down to London, you were going to record the new album, but then basically you were just going out all the time, and rather than actually concentrating and doing your work, and you did it in Scotland in the end, did you?
Yeah, we came down to London to record it, but it was just really slow, and like we weren't functioning properly really, yeah, because we were, like you said, there was a lot of distractions in London, because you can do anything you want to do. So especially like five lads from Middlesbrough were just Stockton, and we come down to London, there's loads to do and there's loads of people to see. So yeah, I think it was a bit slow, so our label and management decided that they'd move us further away. So we went up to record up in Glasgow with a producer called Paul Savage, and he just got the best out of all of us individually and as a band. So it all came together. But I could see why, like, as soon as we got Glasgow the first, like, day, we'd done more work than we did in 2 months down in London. So nice. that's why they're managing us.
Yeah, you need managing, clearly. Now, let's talk about the football. I mean, you mentioned it there. You're from up in the northeast. You're all Middlesbrough fans. Since 2008-09, you've been in the Championship, and those Premier League days seem, they're just sort of falling further and further away into the distance. What's it like being a Middlesbrough fan at the moment?
It's heartbreaking. I just wish that, like, because obviously in 2006 we got to like the UEFA Cup final, and I sort of feel like we took it for granted, because we are just a small club and we did really well. But yeah, I mean, the Championship, it's not the greatest league to be in, especially when, like, all my life we were in the Premier League, a bit of a yo-yo team, so it's a bit hard that we've been in the same league for so long now. But things are looking up now. We've got a new manager called Aitor Karanka, and he seems to be getting the best out of the players. So hopefully, and we're only 6 points off playoffs now, so you never know. If we've been on a really good run since the back end of, like, December, so you never know what can happen.
What songs are there for Aitor Karanka?
Well, I can't think of any at the moment, because it's obscure.
Yeah, and I just fear that, you know, football fans are, you know, they've got a great sense of humour, but I just wonder about the rhyming of Karanka could get you into some trouble, couldn't it, really?
I know, yeah. Ravi Shankar. No, yeah, I think there's one like Seven Nation Army, because it fits in perfectly. So we've got Aitor Karanka fits in quite well.
Ah, I see.
So that's a good one, and it's one for the children as well. It's nothing nasty in it.
Yeah.
Well, we haven't had any reason to rhyme Karanka yet, because he's doing really well.
Yeah, well, that's good to. It's good to see. I mean, we're in a similar situation at Watford with another foreign manager, an Italian that not that many people knew about before he arrived. So hopefully it will work out for both teams, and we can climb up the league come the end of the season. Just tell us a little bit more about the rest of the band. Tell me about Matty Chipchase.
Matthew Chipchase. He's one of my best mates. Now he's what would you like to know about Matthew? He's the singer songwriter. He's a good lad.
What's the deal with his surname?
Chipchase. I don't think he had anything to do with it. I think he was just born and that was his name, Chipchase.
So that's his real name. That's not just that's not a stage name.
No, that's his real name. I think people from down south find it funny, but like it's just quite normal up here.
But isn't it that sort of a style of football, isn't it? Chipping and chasing. It's like long ball football, basically, in a surname.
Yeah, I suppose. I never really thought about it like that. It's normal to us lot, so it's... But I suppose if you've heard the name for the first time, it might be quite strange. But yeah, it's not a very common name around here, but it's one that we don't really bat an eyelid to.
You're right, no, that's cool. I quite like it. So just tell us about the future. How soon will you be dominating the world?
Well, we've got a really busy year coming up. Obviously, we start the mini tour in February. And then going to March. Then we've got the next single coming out at that time called Tune Transmission. So there'll be a video coming out soon and then obviously the single. Got a couple of radio appearances coming up. And then hopefully the festivals, UK festivals and European festivals this year. So I don't know about world domination yet, but we're definitely going in the right direction.
Excellent. Luke, it's been great to have you on.
Nice one. Bye, mate.
Cheers, pal. So thanks to Luke, Lee, Chris, Paddy and Paul. That's episode 4 now done. Don't forget to enter the competition to win a copy of The Life and Times of Herbert Chapman. Name the two Arsenal scorers from the 1930 Cup Final. Send your answers to @TheWatfordGap on Twitter. The competition will close on Friday, the 24th of January. Thanks for your company. See you next month.
The Watford Gap. The Watford Gap is a 2011 Tile production.